You're listening to Bedroom Beethovens, where notable music makers tell their stories on what they sacrifice to create the music you love.
It's just your genuine appreciation on a deep soul level for what artists do. And I love hearing that.
I'm your host, Cello.
What's up? This is J-Rock. And I'm right here. I'm chilling on the Bedroom Beethovens podcast. That's what it is. Let's go.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 181 of the podcast. My guest this week is...
My name is Big Germ. I'm a producer, engineer, so I do, you know, like mixing and recording. And I guess notable credits will be like Mac Miller, Wiz Khalifa, Juicy J, Snoop Dogg, yeah, a lot of other stuff too.
Still the same Cam, who I was is who I am. Drive the Chevy like a lamb, rolling up by the gram. Always sticking to the plan, them other niggas lacking vision. I'm 2020 and my eyes lower than theirs. I ride slower, supersized motor. When you pull up, they outside of the crib. You outsiders, we in, we outshine them. Taylor gang or outline them. You dig, you dig. Riding with my windows down, roll another paper up, paper up, paper up. We just on a grab, working, trying to get our paper up. Working on myself, while I work on everybody else, everybody else. Homie, I've been working on myself, while I work on everybody else, everybody else.
Big Germ is my guest of honor this week, a man who deserves a brick in the house of hip-hop's foundation, if you ask me. He doesn't pop up in many interviews, and you may not know his face, but you know his work. We navigate his life growing up in Pittsburgh area and finding his way into ID Labs, which has plenty of ups and downs, which made him the man he is today, and we will go through those stories. But first, thank you guys for listening to another entry into the Taylor Gang producer series. This wraps up the ID Labs duo, and I want to tell you guys a bit about what I got going on. If you happen to find yourself here for the first time, maybe you stumbled on this episode because you're a huge Mac Miller fan. That's understandable, but I have hours and hours of content with prolific producers from Prince Paul to Cypress Hill, Incubus, Slum Village, Atmosphere, Beat Junkies, and much, much, much more. So feel free to visit bedroombeethovens.com or your favorite podcasting app and go through the old episodes. You may think, man, he really should talk to this guy. Hey, maybe I did already. Who knows? Check the show out on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, and if you're feeling... In an extra supportive mood, patreon.com/bedroombeethovens is set up for you to donate a few bucks and you get early episodes and other perks. Mostly it's just to support me, my efforts telling these stories with these extraordinary human beings. But thank you to J57, Chavez Sound, 5-7 Collective, Taylor Gang, It Takes a Village. Let's get this interview started with the incomparable Big Germ. And let me clear something up. So ID Labs, it can be Big Germ and Edan.
Yeah. So for a long time, we were actually like ID Labs was like a team. So it was me, E, and then Sayez was in there too. And then a couple of years ago, we kind of split apart. And I'm still, you know, we're still cool with each other and stuff. I still work out at ID Labs sometimes, like the studio ID Labs. And yeah, me and E still work on stuff together. We just kind of did our own thing now. So now when you see ID Labs on stuff, it's pretty much just E, but for a long time it was us together as a team.
Is that kind of bittersweet? Because like all of the big production credits of the last 10 years it's like Edan's producer name. Does that take away from the Big Germ legacy? You know what I mean?
I feel kind of selfish saying that, but yeah, I think people for a long time there, I think people were like, people would ask me like, oh, you do you still like make beats and shit? And I'm like, yeah, I just did this shit. You know what I mean? Like, I think people were confused by the ID Labs as a team thing. So yeah, I think it hurt me in some ways, and I'm not trying to, like I said, I don't want to sound like I'm selfish or anything, but it definitely took away from, you know, people's perception of me, I think.
Well, we've cleared that up, man. So, yeah. So, first off, are you a new homeowner? And if you are, congrats.
I am actually, I'm in my studio in my attic right now. I'm kind of getting everything together. There's a lot going on, but, I'm happy about it. It's, you know, homeownership is not always enjoyable. I'm already, finding some of that shit out. So, but yeah, I mean, it's nice to have my own space, and I work from home like 90% of the time. So it's been good.
But you lived in ATL for a stretch, so you're familiar with Southern living.
Yeah. I'm back in Pittsburgh. Like, that's where I bought my house. But yeah, I moved to Atlanta in October of 2018, like a month after Mac passed away. You know, I was there for 2 weeks and came back to Pittsburgh for the memorial. And then, so that was kind of weird. And then 6 months after that, my dad got sick with cancer and passed away that summer. So like summer of 19. And then, you know, 6 months later was COVID and shit. So my whole time in Atlanta was kind of weird.
Yeah, that's back to back, just nonstop, man. So, but the love affair we have with Pittsburgh, were you born and raised in the Pittsburgh area?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, it's called the South Hills. It's just like 8 miles from downtown Pittsburgh. So,
I never heard of the 58s, and I deep dived, and they had a mixtape that paid homage to the blizzard of 1993, which was it hit Pittsburgh like 30 years ago. And I'm like, that storm can't be that bad. And then I'm looking, and like the media dubbed it the storm of the century. So you lived through that personally.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember building like igloos and shit. That's how much snow there was. I mean, I was a little kid, but yeah, I mean, that's what I was doing.
So I glossed over them in my previous question, but help me brush up on Pittsburgh hip hop music scene. So tell me about the rap group, the 58s. They chose the name the 58s because they're all about the fifth of the best liquor and eighths of the best chronic.
That is true. Yeah, they were started by Mayo, who passed away last year. So I'm sad about that. And then my friend Franchise, who I've done like projects with and stuff too. He's a good rapper from Pittsburgh. And then B White was in the 58s. And yeah, Primavera Vills was in the 58s. He was kind of signed to Mac at one point, like maybe like 2015. And Vinny Radio too. Wow, I can't believe I left him out. But yeah, he's another good rapper from Pittsburgh.
Yes, your motherfucking boy Hardo in this bitch. B White, what it do, nigga? Hold on, let me talk to him. Listen, fresh up out the cell, I just dug me in sins. Young nigga, 22, ride 22 inches. Hope my dreams fall through, all this work that I put in. I'm just executing plans, trying to follow my vision. Not the pot that I put the soda and blocks in, but the top where the bitches are swimming topless. And I'm smoking Cohibas, chilling, just watching. Like, how the fuck I get here? I was just locked
in. It's for me, going and kind of research them a little bit, I almost got like a snapshot of the way Pittsburgh kind of treats their talent. Like, I see a lot of people like, oh, you know, you guys should have been millionaires. You guys are better than Mac because y'all never left Pittsburgh. Forget Kush and OJ. You guys have the mixtape of the year. And it's almost like Pittsburgh has a chip on their shoulder that they never made it big or as big as people wanted them to be.
A lot of those people don't understand the music industry. So, you know, staying in Pittsburgh, which I've done, you know, I lived in LA for a little bit and I lived in Atlanta, but I've been in Pittsburgh most of the time, and I do, you know, feel like if I was out there more, like if I just moved to LA and I was like, I'm doing it, like, I feel like my career would have been better. But it kind of is what it is. Like, if you stay in Pittsburgh, it's probably not going
to
happen.
And if you're like a white skateboarder in the 90s in Pittsburgh, listen to hip hop, that just makes you like an outlier.
Yeah, pretty much.
Whoa. So that's kind of when, you know, skateboarding is your focus, but you're messing around with Fruity Loops back in, I don't know, the mid 2000s. a real world scenario is I could hit up this skateboarder on MySpace and buy a beat, which is what Mac Miller did. So
he did.
How many people took advantage of that service? Was Mac an outlier, or you had a bunch of people hitting you up?
It's kind of funny the way the skateboarding thing works into it, because there was there's a store here called Time Bomb, and it's like, you know, back in the day when mixtapes were on CDs and like people would buy mixtapes, like whatever, like Dipset mixtapes and shit. Time Bomb had all those mixtapes, and then he had like, the owner's name is Brick. He had clothing, all that shit. So I had friends, like I was sponsored for skateboarding and just like a skate shop in Pittsburgh. Like I wasn't that good, but I was good in this area, I guess. But they were cool with Brick at Time Bomb. So, you know, I had given him a beat CD at some point, and then this rapper Boaz from Pittsburgh, who's a really good rapper, actually, he's done stuff with like Wiz and Mac and everybody. He was like the first person to get a beat from me just off a beat CD. And then he had that CD down at ID Labs or whatever. And yeah, like Chevy Woods got a beat, and Wiz too. And this was in like 2007. So yeah, it's really, you know, skateboarding does kind of like tie it all back. Like that's kind of how I met a bunch of people like that. And I met Wiz's first manager at Time Bomb as well. So
how much would like a big germ beat run you? Or like, maybe do you remember the beat that Mac Miller wanted that early? Whatever happened to that beat?
I probably charged him like $300 or something. And even a lot of this stuff before that, I wasn't even charging people. Like I didn't charge Boaz for those first beats, and I didn't charge Wiz for like, the first thing I did was like on Prince of the City 1 or Prince of the City 2 for him. And like, I wasn't charging people. I think I charged Mac at that point, because he told me he had a I don't know if you know Will Calson. He was like Mac's manager at the time, and he was paying for shit. So yeah, I think I charged him like $300. It was something off the High Life. I don't know if you know about that project me and Mac did.
So if someone like Mac Miller was, quote unquote, he was just kind of like flying around the studio. Some people gelled with him. Some people were annoyed with him. Some people wanted to work with him. I know Edan said he came to the dance maybe 6 months after you. How did he worm his way in to start getting sessions? And then once the session started, how did he win you guys over personally?
I went to like audio engineering school in New York, and I was kind of like, you know, I didn't really know, you know, I had to move back to Pittsburgh because I was broke and I didn't really know what I was going to do. And then I interned at ID Labs. This is after I had already gotten beats to people. So Edan was like semi-familiar with me. So I interned there like 2008. And then there was another engineer there that was a little, you know, he was kind of flaky. He already had known Mac, but he would make Mac wait for like 4 hours, you know what I mean? Just to get in the studio. Like he didn't care about him at all. So kind of at that point, that guy got in a car accident and he wasn't in the studio for like months. So I just ended up, you know, going from interning to just being there like 24/7. And then, you know, Mac would be coming around trying to like trade me like some stolen like computer monitor for studio time or like whatever he could. He would try to get into the studio, and like he definitely annoyed me at first. But he was so persistent, and like he did have a like charisma. Like even back then, it was just like, you know, I could tell people were drawn to him. We kind of just became friends. He was almost like a little brother in a way, like in like his crew too, like Q, like Quentin Cuff. We just kind of became cool. And then they were there all the time. And he was cool with Wiz too, because they went to the same high school. So yeah, I don't know. It kind of developed into a friendship. Like, and I think Edan was kind of unsure of him as well. But, you know, me and Mac had done a couple of songs that never even came out together, where like, you know, Mac would play keys or like guitar or whatever. And I think E was impressed by that, because I don't think he knew that side of Mac at that point.
So before that friendship took place and that internship, you said that you're going to school like in the heart of Chelsea. Why even go there in the first place if you never had aspirations to, I mean, you never really wanted to be a recording engineer, did you?
Nah, really. You did your research. It's really stupid. It's going to sound stupid, but I was just like, I wanted my beats to sound better. Like I wanted to learn how to mix. So that's why I went there. But, you know, it's really more focused on the recording aspect of it. So, you know, when I was in school, it was good to learn those basics, but that wasn't really my goal. You know, as I kind of came up, you know, at least in Pittsburgh, it's like the fact that I was able to record people and I would be in the same room with people. So, you know, like they might need a beat eventually or whatever. And it's like, oh yeah, by the way, I make beats too. So that kind of got me in the door a lot. So I would recommend that to anybody. Learn how to engineer too.
You never wanted to follow your dad's footsteps in the insurance industry?
Definitely not. I knew, I told my mom when I was like a little kid, like probably like 10 years old, I was like, I never want to work in an office, like cubicle type of situation. So,
hey, but
I guess I got lucky in that.
He wasn't a boring guy though. You know, he had a Plymouth Barracuda and he was nicknamed Savage. So
that is true.
So your relationship between you and Wiz, you guys started as interns. His deal was trading studio time for interning. What was your trade-off? I mean, I guess you touched on it, but it was strictly experience, or was the vision not so much clear? You were just like, I just want to be surrounded in this environment that I know that I want to make a career out of.
Yeah, because all I was really doing was trying to make beats like in the Pittsburgh area, and like, you know, you can't really live off that. So I was definitely struggling at the time, and I would really only come down. It would be like, I would come on Fridays and clean the toilet and alphabetize the E's record collection and, you know, like shit like that. Just clean up after whatever session was just there. So yeah, I don't know that I like how far along I was thinking, but yeah, I was just kind of trying to be around stuff. And then, yeah, it was just like, ID Labs, even at that point, was the only studio, like the main like rap studio, you know what I mean? Like there were a lot of other places in Pittsburgh, but, you know, it would be more rock focused and those engineers wouldn't understand, you know, the details of a rap song. And they probably, I'm sure they weren't even really nice to those clients. So we kind of ended up being the spot for that. So.
And did you and Wiz really land in jail together?
Yeah, we were, it was in North Carolina, East Carolina University, I think. It was a college tour. So it was the tour where Wiz called his bus the Puff Bus, which, you know, the cops already knew about when we got there. So we pull up and like that bus was hilarious because it just, you know, it's just like basically smoking as you're going down. Like you can see the smoke coming out of it. Driving down the highway. So we pulled up and it's like clearly smells like big weed on there. And that particular show, this was like kind of later in the tour, and I had seen the show so many times, so I'm like I'll just stay on the bus and like make beats or whatever. And then I kept hearing knocking on the bus and I ignored it for a long time. Like I wasn't going to be the one to let the cops in, you know what I mean? And then everybody, you know, the show was over, everybody came back to the bus, and the cops were just waiting there. And I don't know. I think there was only like a zip of weed between 10 people at that point. So it was like, they tried giving us trafficking because it was like, you know, it was on tour, like a state to state kind of thing. So yeah, that was scary.
That's funny. So, I mean, you touched on like there were past engineers at ID Labs that are kind of either flakes or they keep people waiting in the studio. So your mindset when you're there and Wiz Khalifa wants to start working with you, he's hitting you up at like 10 o'clock at night for sessions. So, you know, if you're taking a shower and you're getting ready to chill on the couch and watch Netflix and pass out, you can't do that. You get a text from Wiz and you have to decide, man, can we do this at 10 a.m. tomorrow? Or you have to go down there and make yourself readily available. I guess that's how you get ahead while other people don't want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what it was, especially for him. I mean, even then, like, you know, he wasn't who he is now, but even then it was like he was a big deal at like, especially around here too, you know what I mean? It's like I wasn't gonna say no to anything. So and I wasn't shit yet, so like I wasn't doing anything. I was like, whatever, I don't get to go to sleep till 7 in the morning, that's fine, you know? So yeah, I was available.
Well, I don't want to romanticize the early 2010s too much, because that was when, you know, like you say, Wiz, Mac, you didn't have preconceived notions of how they thought their career should go. And it was a time when Wiz wanted to make music, and it was a time where you actually wanted to produce. And in your words, there was less money involved, so it was more fun. Mm-hmm. So does that mean if in present day, if Wiz Khalifa texts you now and wants to make music together with you, he just bought an $8 million mansion, and you can't replicate that feeling, that energy, because people have lifestyles they have to uphold and Rolls Royce payments they need to make. So now it's, let's not make music. Now we have to make as many top 40 hits as we can. Does that change the dynamic for the worse? Is it really?
Just speaking for myself, just when everything was new, it was cool to me.
Out of smoke weed where they said I can't. Got rich when they said I can't. Got high and got on the plane and brought all my niggas when they said I can't. Went shopping places they said I can't. Bought some shit that they said I can't. Jumped on the road and did all them shows because I was popping.
I don't think on that level, like, it's still cool to be in there with him. And he was in Pittsburgh like early December, and I don't think Wiz is really thinking that every time he goes to the studio. Like, I think a lot of it is him just having fun, like seeing what happens. So but that's just speaking for me, I guess.
But all his money was in the plan. That was all about them Benjamins. Ballin' hard and you in the stands. All his money, I'm a business man. Out of all his niggas, I'm the realest man. I'm the realest man.
I'm a worrywart. If I had that much success, I would be like banging out as many hits as possible, because, you know, the music industry is so fickle. You could lose it all tomorrow. Like, what have you done for me lately? Oh, you haven't had a hit in 3 years. We're going to drop you. That, I would have so much anxiety if I was famous.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, it's so much pressure to live up to whatever you've done in the past. And, you know, nowadays too, it's like fans care about, like people like fans will compete with other fans about like album sales and shit for their favorite artists. And it's like, I don't even know why that shit matters to you. Like, if you like the song, you know what I mean? Like, the sales have nothing to do with the music as far as I'm concerned. But, yeah, I just think it's funny nowadays. It's like everybody has an opinion, and, you know, the opinions are readily available online. So it's like,
it's a gray area though, because if I say, well, why did Wiz and Mac blow up but the 58s didn't? Is it lightning in a bottle? Is it a set of things?
Yeah, I think it is a combination of things. I think really Wiz was the one that started everything for Pittsburgh, as far as, like, you know, nobody had ever done anything like that before. That definitely helped Mac at the beginning. You know, he was able to follow in those footsteps. I think some of those other people, like, whether they know it or not, or whether they'll admit it or not, like, they weren't willing to put in what Mac and Wiz were putting in. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of what it comes down to. And that's just me being honest. So, yeah, I mean, I think, like, it's just a lot more than, it's more than just talent. You know, there's a lot more that comes along with it. And there's a lot of stuff that, to be a big artist, there's a lot of things you have to do that, you know, you don't love having to do radio interviews like the next day after whatever, after some show, or you were in the studio all night or whatever. It's like, I don't know that everybody's built like that to just, you know, that's all you care about.
And then the next logical step is, like, if you outgrow Philly, you go to LA, and you actually lived with Mac Miller in LA, right?
Mm-hmm.
So was the aspiration for you to take the next step in your career, or you just wanted to be closer to Mac and make music for him without, you know, having the email beats or him the flat of the Pittsburgh? Were you just, well, I guess, you know, looking back, was it good for your career?
There's actually a lot more to that story too. I got shot in the summer of 2016. So Mac was like, why don't you just come out here for a while or whatever? Like, that was pretty much it. Cause, the night I got shot, it was kind of funny because he was dating Ariana Grande and they were coming to town that day. So I was in the studio all day and I went home and was walking my dogs and these kids tried to rob me, whatever. I got shot and I'm in the hospital. That's how I met Ariana Grande. Like, she came to the hospital after I got shot. So that was her first impression of Pittsburgh too. So that wasn't great. And then, yeah, from there, Mac just asked me to come live with him in LA. And that was like in 2017, but that was right when he was clean too. So I think he was, you know, he was figuring out some shit with himself and he wasn't super motivated. I think he was in a mindset of, like, you know, can I be creative without drugs or whatever? that whole period of time when I was out there, we didn't even do a whole lot of, we didn't do much recording and stuff. It wasn't really good for my career, honestly. I didn't really do a whole lot. Like I made beats and stuff, but I think I was kind of in a bad headspace too, you know, just after the shooting and stuff, whatever. Yeah, I didn't make the most out of it when I was there. So,
well, just because you guys weren't working consistently, were you guys at least talking on a personal level?
That's pretty much all it was, like us just like hanging out with each other, like playing video games. We would go play tennis. Yeah, just kind of hanging out more than doing music together. Yeah, so it was kind of interesting.
That incident happened at Highland Park?
Yeah.
Is that like a notoriously dangerous area, or that was like an anomaly?
Yeah, it's definitely not a dangerous area. I mean, it's kind of surrounded by certain neighborhoods that you might consider dangerous, but yeah, it was weird. And it was on like this main street there that has like good restaurants and stuff, but it was on a Monday and everything was closed, you know, at that point. So it was like, it is the main street, but there was nothing really going on. So I think it made it kind of easier for those kids to just like run up on somebody. If it was like any other day, I don't think it would have happened like that.
Do you think it was because you were wearing a nice watch, nice shoes, or it was just completely random?
I mean, I don't wear a watch. I was wearing some Jordans, but they weren't, you know, like they weren't real nice at that point. And I was walking, like I had two Pomeranians with my ex-girlfriend. So I'm literally just walking two little tiny dogs, and these dudes just like rolled up on me. And I was like, all I had was my keys. I don't even think I had my wallet on me because I was just walking the dogs and going straight home. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what that was. I don't know if it was like some like initiation type thing or what, but yeah, it was definitely weird.
Well, you opened up a crowdfunding, and there was a lot of support, and I was seeing a lot of $5, $25 donations. And like, I was like, how many people donated to where it ended up being the sum it was? And then boom, I see a $10,000 donation from Mac Miller, a guy who traded in computer monitors for studio time, is now in a position to pay it forward, which I think speaks volumes for Mac. And, but the pessimist in me noticed that the goal fell short by a large sum. Was that a situation where you saw who your real friends and your supporters were? Did you expect some people to step up more? I mean, it's a tough thing to even think about when you're going through something so tragic, but Mac stepped up. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's I don't know, bad etiquette, but maybe as human nature, you start to think about stuff like that. It puts things in perspective when you're laying in the hospital bed.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, just doing, like, I know a lot of people from like different backgrounds from doing music. And it was just funny because it was like, you know, some people I talked to, it's like, wow, I can't believe you got shot. That's so crazy. Like, that's the worst thing ever. And then other dudes would be like, oh, you only got shot one time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, different people's perspective is kind of interesting. But yeah, I think I guess I would have thought some people would have reached out more. Like, I don't even want to go to like that financial aspect of it. Like, I appreciate what Mac did. I'm not going to say somebody else didn't do enough or whatever, but yeah, I thought some people like didn't take it super seriously, and that was interesting, but it is what it is. But yeah, I think I learned from that for sure.
Yeah. I'm trying to get a handle like, on the music industry as a whole. And like, you know, I feel like when you produce for people, they pay for the beats, but you're doing them a favor too. And I'll use Freddie Gibbs as an example, because I don't think he's going to hear this or care, but Freddie Gibbs' debut album, you had a helping hand in, and on paper you see Evil Seeds grow naturally. And then the next year he's working with Madlib, and he seems to stick close with him ever since. When he released Deeper EP and then Pinata after that, were you kind of left your head scratching, like, well, why did he pivot away from me, you know? Or in scenarios like that, you don't take things personally?
I guess I don't take it personally. Like, I don't, you know, I don't get like upset. It's like, that's his choice, like whatever. I didn't like come up with him to the point where it's like I feel like I like he owes me some shit or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see. Like, I kind of wish, like, even just now, like, I wish I could just like send him a beat and he would care about it. But, you know, I mean, I haven't sent him anything in a long time, but I don't even think he, in my head, he probably doesn't even remember me. You know what I mean? So it is what it is. I mean, I feel like that shit's happened a lot in my career with with people. So it kind of is what it is. I think that's another thing about living in Pittsburgh, is like out of sight, out of mind kind of thing. You know, it's just like, I'm not around these dudes all the time. So
that's probably why John Bryan kind of stepped in. What did you think of John Bryan's interpretation of Mac Miller? Do you think that he handled the execution of Circles well? Do you wish that you had a bigger part of the record?
I'll be honest, I was a little hurt. I didn't have much input at all on that one. And yeah, I mean, with John Bryan, I mean, he's like super talented. So I'm not even saying I would do anything better than him. You know what I mean? That's not realistic. But yeah, I just, sometimes I, you know, it hurts sometimes if you're left out of some shit just on a personal level. But I don't know. Once again, it's like, I can't really control what other people do. It's like, and you know, like, Mac always had a vision with things, and it's like, if that was his vision, then that's what it is. You know what I mean? Like, I respect it.
Well, I, you know, the last thing I want to do is put words in Edan's mouth, but I kind of asked him that question, and he said that John Bryan was the only person who would have been able to handle that responsibility.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. And, you know, I like, I mean, I don't know how everybody feels about Kanye at this point, but like, I love Late Registration. So it's like, you know, thinking about John Bryan working on that, you know, it's like, that's cool to have that dude, you know, doing finishing touches on your album. You know what I mean? Like, I totally get it. And I agree with what E said. It's like, I don't know who else really would have been able to do it to that level.
But even still, you worked with him, you chilled with him, you lived with him, and yet when he passes, you say that you didn't appreciate him enough when he was alive, and you don't seem like you took him for granted, but I know you wish you had more time with him. Where does that statement stem from?
I don't even think I appreciated how like difficult, like, being on that level of, you know, I guess stardom, you know, there were some things where it's like, his life is a lot more difficult than people give him credit for. Like, even at the beginning, it's like, you know, if you look at the way his career kind of went, it was like, he graduated high school, put kids out. And then it was just like up from there. You know, there's definitely growing pains in there. And, you know, if you're like, he's like 18 years old, it's like certain things you don't know how to handle, or, you know, you have an opportunity to, you know, work with Pharrell or whoever like that at that point. You know, I think I just didn't appreciate like how hard some of that stuff was for him to work through. And then, yeah, I think when I say I didn't appreciate him enough, it was just kind of like, it is like you said, where, you know, you don't think it's just going to end that soon. Like, you know, I thought we would be like old and still, you know, breaking each other's balls. You know what I mean? Like, I think, yeah, it just kind of teaches you, you have to kind of appreciate everybody that's around you that, you know, that you're close to.
Naturally, you're probably going to step away from music when stuff like that happens. How did you find your love of music again? Because a year ago, you said you were done making beats for a while. And then 6 months ago, you said you get zero enjoyment from it now. So is it a slump, or you're either out of it now? Because I hear you posting beats on Instagram and they're fantastic, but maybe you're begrudgingly making music now, or maybe you've caught a new wind and you're enjoying it again. What's the status? What is it all about?
I think for a while there, it's like, I was making so many beats and like, I don't know if it's just like, I'm not good at the marketing side of myself, you know, as a producer. Like, I legitimately have social anxiety. So it's like, I don't always put myself in those situations to like play beats for people. You know, obviously that sounds stupid, like shooting myself in the foot, but I think like I got to a point where I'm making so many beats and I feel like nobody cares anyway. So it's like, what's the point? So I think it was kind of that. And then like, basically it's just like, why do I keep just like cranking beats out for whatever, you know? And then I think more recently I'm like, well, it really doesn't matter. I'm going to do it for myself. And then hopefully like some shit happens, whatever. Like, I don't even really care. I'm just going to do the shit I like to do. Like, I still do a lot of like sample based shit that, you know, is a pain in the ass when it, if you do get it placed, it's a pain in the ass to clear samples, whatever. But yeah, I mean, that's the shit I like. So I'm just going to keep doing that. And I don't know. I think just trying to, there's always something I can learn, you know, just trying to get better every day. And that's pretty much it.
What brought upon that shift where if hip hop didn't have samples, then it wasn't real hip hop. And then you abandoned that idea and started embracing all sounds.
I don't know. It is funny though. Like you say that, cause you know, back in the day, I hated like the Swizz Beatz era. Like I hated those kind of beats, but, and that's why I liked like Kanye and Just Blaze and shit like that. You know, I don't think it, I don't like, I don't want to say like real hip hop, cause that like, I'm not the one to judge whatever, but it was just what I liked. And then I think, you know, I do enjoy like harder shit too. Like, I don't even want to use the word like trap, but like that kind of sound, you know, like with the 808s and shit, like it's cool to do different stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't know. I just always like the sampling aspect of it for some reason. Like even before I ever made a beat, I was like, I, you know, gravitated towards stuff like that.
Can you separate the art from the artist? Like if Kanye West was a source of inspiration, you're probably not a huge fan of him personally in today's climate. But how do you feel about that? Because, you know, you have people like Bink and Just Blaze. They stay out of the headlines. They have these fruitful careers. They've made classics. But they keep their mouth shut.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's honestly disappointing to me, really, because he's like, Kanye's really like the person that made me want to make beats. And this is like from like the blueprint, like what, like before, you know, his albums and shit, he's really the person where I was like, I guess it kind of made sense, like what he was doing with the samples and shit. I just like that whole time period, like the whole Rockefeller shit back then. And yeah, like, I mean, I just watched that documentary, The Genius One on Netflix. Like, I can separate it in my head for sure. And I've been less into his shit. Like, I'm not hating on anybody. I'm just saying, like, I've been kind of less into him for the past 10 years anyway. So I kind of like in my head, I like separate that, the dude from 20 years ago from now. But, you know, I know everybody, you know, has a different perspective on that.
Well, Big Germ, I appreciate your willingness to talk about these subjects, whether they're easy or hard to talk about. I recognize it, and I thank you for it.
For sure. Thank you.
At this time, I want to give you the floor, though, because as you know, people have heard the journey and all the work you put in. And like I said, on Instagram, those beats, they're crazy, man. Like if you feel unappreciated or if not enough artists are banging down your door, that's, trust me, that's their problem, not yours. So 2023, you know, what can the fans expect?
Well, yeah, I appreciate that for sure. Yeah, I mean, I want to just, this year, I just want to do more, you know, like I want to maybe do like a Twitch situation, like just put myself out there more because I've never really been into that. But, you know, just try to connect with people a little more. And I'm like, I want to get beats to a lot of different people. And I try to make all different sounds, you know, all different types of beats. So yeah, that's really the goal, just kind of spread it out and see what happens, you know?
Well, I wish a great year for you and your lovely wife and the new homestead, and wishing all of your endeavors are big time, man. So thanks, bro.
Thank you. I appreciate you.